But right, the game of life is an interesting game because it starts with, I don't know, you're probably like 18, you know, and you have to decide right away which direction you're going to go, right? Am I going to go to college? Am I just going to go get a career? And you have to spin the wheel, and it makes you go forward. And some people go farther, and some people go, like, not as far. I remember one game, one of us, when our family played, is like every single time it was like a two, you know? So, like, it's like, tink, tink, like life wasn't going fast enough, you know, for that player on our, in our family going through and around the thing. Because it can take a long time to wait for the last player, you know? Luckily, there's those moments where everybody has to stop, right? So you choose a career and you pick a card and that tells you what, you know, what career it is. And so first you start with you in the car, and this is me. It's supposed to be blue. It's really dark blue. And so you're the driver in the car and you're going on a life. Now, what's the next thing that happens after a career? You get married, right? And so, ding, you got married. And the cool thing is, once you get married, I wish it was like this in real life. Everybody, you spin the wheel, right? And then, like, every player either has to give you, like, $10,000 or, like, $50,000 or something. It's like, dang, I would have started really well, you know, if that was the case. I mean, when I got married, I had $0, and, like, we lived in a tiny little place, you know? So it seems like the game of life doesn't really match up with real life so much, you know? And so you keep going around the board, and then you land on certain, like, things, and sometimes it's a card. You have to do an action. Sometimes those actions are good, and sometimes they're really scary. The one that cracks me up in the new version, that I'm like, really? Really? Pull that up. The one on the right is start a snail farm. Shells are the future. Pay $50,000, right? Womp, womp. You know, like, that's the bad one. And that, if you get that one pretty early on, your life's going to stink. Just saying, like, other things aren't going to go well for you. And then the other one, you never know what you're going to get. Like, it's your great uncle Max's 100th birthday and a $30,000 party for your uncle, who's not going to remember it. He's going to sleep through half of it. He's 100, right? Like, come on. Gee whiz. Life, you know? Life. And then what happens after you have the kid and you keep going along, you stop at another spot and you have babies, right? All of a sudden you have babies and it might be twins. You've got twins. It's like, oh, add two more to the car. Yeah, and there's other spots you can stop and get more kids. I remember one time, I think it was Luke, our youngest, he should have had a trailer. I mean, he had so many kids. Every time it was twins, he had like eight kids by the end. I'm like, wow, you're going to make out in the end. Because you know what happens with kids in the end of the game? You get money for them, all right? You sell your kids at the end of the game of life. Like, this is wrong. This is very wrong, all right? So he's like, I'm going to make out at the end, you know, well, how much each kid's worth, and he's counting it up, you know? And so then you keep going on, and at the end of the game, you know, in your car, you're going around the track, when you get to the end of the game, it's retirement, you know, and you choose where you're going to retire, Country Acres or, you know, whatever the two retirement places are. And then when finally everybody gets to retirement, what do? You count all your stuff. You sell your kids, you sell your house, you sell everything, and then you count who has the most money at the end of the game. And that's not, the game's not real, is it? Like, that's not real life. The one who has it all in the end isn't the winner, right? And yet, that's what that game teaches us. It's like, you know, I could go political on that. If you have more kids right now, you do get more money, but that's a whole other issue, right? We're not going there. But that's the game of life. Like, it has all these crazy sides and ups and downs, and the one with the most in the end wins. Have any of you ever felt like in your own life, in relationships, going through, that have you ever felt those certain points in life where there's those relational expectations from other people, right? Have you ever dating, and then you've dated a long time? What's the next question? When are you guys going to get engaged would be the first one, right? And then it's like, now when are you going to get married? And then you're married, and you're like just freshly married, and then what's the next question? When are you going to have kids? It's like, excuse me, we just did this thing. Like, now we got to do the next thing, so you feel this expectation. That, and then when you have kids, what's the next thing? I don't know what it is. When are you gonna die? I think it's the last one. It's like, you have kids and you die. I mean, that's life, right? retirement's in there. Sorry. When are you gonna retire? You know, you're gonna work your butt off your whole life. Then you're gonna retire, and then you're gonna die. Welcome to life. You know, it's like, but you experience those things, those relational expectations. That okay, what's next, and then what's the next thing, and what's the next thing, and they're supposed to be done in a certain order, and the reality is, for most of us in this room, life hasn't been that linear, has it? It's been more up, down, sideways, and you took a trail over here that wasn't even on the game board, and like, oh, and I got to find my way back to the game board and figure out life. And like, that's, you know, life is all over the charts. And so we were doing this series, and we're using this kind of a theme just for fun, you know, just to have some fun with it, because the reality is, like, life isn't all that easy. Life isn't really a game, you know. There's times that are fun, times that we have a blast and things, but we wanted to talk about the relationships inside of family. Now, as we start this series, this sermon this morning is just the beginning, okay? So we're going to just kind of like hit a couple of topics. I'm actually going to teach you some things that Pastor Jim and I put together, and we teach in the Equip class that we do, the Equip cohorts, that 12-month experience. So those of you who are in that, you'd be like, this is going to be familiar to you. Those of you who haven't been in that, like, I'm hoping to give you some cool framework to think about relationships, okay? But if you're in the room and you're like, maybe you're single, maybe you're divorced, maybe you're a widow, maybe you wanted kids but you don't have kids, maybe you're living together, maybe there's a lot of maybes in the room, right? I don't want you to think, boy, this is they're doing a series about family and they're going to teach like this, and that's it. So let me ask you all a question real quick. How many of you, at one point or another in your life, have had parents? Raise your hands if you've had. Okay, good. That's good to know. None of you were hatched. All right, so you all had parents, you know? So that means you were a part of a family, right? Like, we all have family, one way or another. And we all have connection relationships with other families. And all the things we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about different things. We're going to be talking about husbands and wives and parenting and kids and sibling relationships and even greater family relationships and priorities. Like, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things. And I don't want you to think, boy, when they talk about this one, that's really not for me because I've already been through that, or no, I haven't, or whatever. Like, I want you to have an open mind, open ears to hear, because out of any of the things we're going to talk about through this series, there will be things all of us in this room can learn from. Okay? Can we agree on that? Is that okay? So I don't want you to like tune out like, well, you know, I'm not in my 20s and with a baby, so I don't know, that doesn't relate to me. It might relate to you if you listen and see what God may want to speak to you with what we talk about, okay? As we go through this, because we're going to be covering a lot of different things as we go through this, because no matter where you come from, no matter what your family life is like, like I said earlier, maybe you're single, maybe you're married, maybe you're divorced, maybe your in-laws feel like outlaws, maybe you've been hurt, maybe you got difficult kids, maybe your home right now is just full of stress. Like, no matter what, or maybe things are going good and you got a great family and your relationship is great, your marriage is growing awesome. No matter what, we're all going to learn something on this journey, okay, as we walk through it. Now, I'm going to hop right to it. So this is what I want us to do. If you got your worship programs, pull those out. I'm going to be kind of like going through a bunch of different passages this morning. So a lot of times I usually just pick one kind of big chunk of a passage and we dig into that. This morning, because it's an intro, we're going to be in a couple different places. But I've got some pretty cool stuff to start us off with, okay? And the first thing I want to talk about in relationships, in not just in the family, but just in relationships in general, for those of you who are Christ followers in the room, there's something that we want more than anything else. There's something that we should have in those relationships. And this is point number one. We should have Christ-centered relationships. If we are Christians, we should be nurturing and growing in Christ-centered relationships, okay? That means that Jesus, if he's a part of our life, that he should be a part of every part of our life, okay? Now, I'm going to explain that through this whole sermon, what that means. And we're going to start with the greater and kind of narrow down into the smaller in the topic. Because the greater thing is going to start in Galatians, the book of Galatians chapter 2. Okay? Galatians 2:20 is just a general statement for all of us who are Christians, who are Christ followers. It's what it says. It says, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. This verse right here, this verse is the center of the gospel. And it's how the gospel gets worked out in us, okay? The gospel is this. in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. That's the gospel. That's what Jesus did, right? We've talked about that through the whole, you know, the last series we did, the religious reboot. It's that Jesus gave his life, paid for my sin, died on the cross, rose again. I can have life just as he has given it to me, right? That's the gospel. So because Jesus has done that for me, what does that mean for me, right? And it says, I have been crucified with Christ and no longer live. So there's a sacrifice. When I accept the gospel, when I realize that how much Jesus has loved me and how much he's paid for me, I in return give him myself, right? I give my life to him. And I have talked about this a lot here at New Hope. That is a greater exchange, right? It's the lesser for the greater. It's me exchanging my sin, my brokenness, my hurt, all the things that I've gone through for his righteousness, his holiness, his grace, his love. Like that's a great exchange, right? And so that's what he's saying. My life, I've been crucified with Christ. My life now is not just mine. I've given me up, and Christ is now in me. So I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. So now I am with Christ. Christ is in me. He's changing me. He's molding me. He's at the center. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God. This is the image of a Christian right here. This one verse. I'm now not my own. This is an issue of like Christian terms would be, this is lordship. Like when you say like Jesus is Lord, the word Lord, like we don't really say that about anybody else, you know? I'm sure you don't say that about your spouse. My spouse is my Lord, you know? All right, like we don't say those things because Lord sounds like somebody lording over you. It sounds like negative, right? Like it sounds like somebody trying to control you, trying to like stop lording over me. Gee whiz, like that's the terminology in our English language that we use. But the word Lord is somebody who is in control over, who has authority over, right? Lordship. And so for us as Christians, we choose to get ourselves off the throne of our own life. Because that's pre-Christ. And when we realize what he's done to pay for us, pay for our sin and our brokenness, we then put him on the throne of our life, right? He then is the Lord. I give him full access and full control. What do you want from me, Jesus, right? This is the image of living a Christ-centered life. All right, is everybody with me? You understand what I'm talking about now? Okay, because this right here is the beginning of anything we're going to talk about, being a parent or a wife or what, or a husband or a sibling, or like this right here is the core. If we don't get this right, your relationships aren't going to be right no matter where they are, whether it's a friendship or it's a coworker or whether it's at school or whatever it is. Like if you don't get this one right, all the other ones aren't going to be right. They're going to be messed up. And so we want to get this right from the very beginning. I am no longer my own. I live in the body, and I live by faith in the Son of God. I am choosing to live a Christ-centered life. Okay? Now, let's go to the next level, another passage in Colossians chapter 3. Now, I said we're going to be hopping around, okay? Colossians chapter 3. Colossians is one of those books that's like kind of like Ephesians. There's just a lot of practical good stuff in the book of Colossians, and we're going to be using it probably through this series. But in Colossians chapter 3, we see what it means to live in faith. Like, what does it mean to walk as a Christ follower? You've probably heard this verse before, because this is one of those all-encompassing verses, just like the last one. It says, and whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So let me ask you this question. What all does that include? Everything, right? Like, so, and say it with me, and whatever you do, whether it's in word, what's the way you're talking, or deeds, like the way you're living, like whatever you are up to. And this is an all-encompassing passage. It's like at work, at school, in your marriage, in your home, and as a parent, as whatever, like whatever you're up to, put Christ at the center. Because when you do that, honestly, life is better. Like it just is, you know? Put Christ at the center and then see what happens in those relationships. And if you're doing it, and you're going to do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Now, it's interesting because the passage is right after this. Do you know what they're about? They're about being a wife, a husband, a child, a father. Like, it goes right into the relationship stuff. So whatever you do, do it all for God. And now here's the roles that you're going to do it in, right? We're learning. We're going to be learning through this time to how to put Christ at the center of our relationships, okay? Everybody say this. We say Christ at the center. Ready? Christ at the center. That's the goal. That's the goal in all these things that we're going to be talking about, okay? Christ at the center. Now let me give you a diagram. This is more of a teaching. Some of you like teaching, Tim, where it's like, this. Yay, go home. You know, like, that's what this morning is. We're going to learn some stuff, okay? So in our life with these kind of relationships, we all have specific spheres of relationships around us, right? And I want to talk about four spheres of relationships that we all have that this applies to, okay? So you can draw this diagram if you want to. We call this the four relational spheres, okay? And this is for if you're a Christian, right? If you're a Christ follower. You can see the three kind of outer circles. This one up here is the sphere of relationships in your family or in your home. Right? So that's one big sphere. Those, you know, you've got relationships, very close relationships. Those should be the closest relationships you have because you're living together, right? You're going through life together, and that is that sphere. Then down over here, you have your relationships in the world, right? So these are friendships or coworkers or anything else outside of your home. That is relationships in the world. Whatever your circle of influence is, wherever people are that you are consistently at, that's your second sphere, okay? Now, if you're Christian, you have this third sphere over here, which is your church family. We see all through the New Testament, that the church is called the body, right? It's the body of Christ, that God designed us to be connected relationally in our Christianity. That we weren't designed to be individual Christians out just doing our own thing. Like, we're designed to be together. And awesome things happen when we're together and using spiritual gifts and encouraging, admonishing, challenging, blessing, praying for. Like, I forget how many one another's there are all through the New Testament. There's lots of passages that say, do this for one another, serve one another, love one another, bear with one another. Like, all these one another's, right? Because we're created to be in relationship as a church family. So that is, as a Christian, should be one of the key of your spheres of relationships. But you see, right in the middle is your relationship with Christ, right? That your relationship with Christ is and should be the most important relational sphere you have. Because that's the one, as you grow in it, as you learn, as Jesus shepherds you, that he leads you, that relationship, you can see it's in the middle for a reason. It intersects all the other spheres of relationships that you have. It actually guides and directs every single one of those relationships in your life that you have. And so we want to learn how to do this so well, that this relationship just naturally gets healthier, naturally grows more, naturally becomes more like the dream that God has for marriage, for parenting, for all the relationships involved there. And that your relationship with the church continues to grow because Christ in you is growing. So now you understand how you're wired. You understand the gifts you bring in relationship. You understand how to pray for one. You get to live out in blessing those relationships. And then your relationship with Jesus affects how you relate with the world, what friends that you walk with, the ones that may be rough around the edges, but you're there to love them and to bless them and to be Christ in front of them, or people you didn't pick, but you work next to them, right? Like your relationship with Christ should affect how you work there and your attitude towards your boss and all those kind of things. When we put Christ at the center, it affects all of our relational spheres. Does that make sense? Okay. I'll ask one more time for those that didn't hear the question. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. Excellent. Okay, because this is what we want. We want Jesus at the center. We want Christ-centered relationships. We want to understand how he helps us. This goes back to John chapter 15. A couple of series ago, remember when Dom preached on the vine? Do you guys remember that? Okay, the whole picture of that? In John chapter 15, we see this picture of what it means to be a Christ-centered Christian, right? That have Christ in the center of all of our relationships. John chapter 15, I'm just reading these two verses from that whole passage. He talks about this. He says, remain in me, and as I also remain in you, no branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. It's that whole picture of the vine and the branches, right? I'll do the dance if you want me to. If you guys remember what Dom said, like, this is us, we're the branch, and this is Jesus, the vine, and, you know, and then he like moves us around. All right, if you didn't see that sermon, it was a few weeks ago. It was a number of weeks ago. But that's the picture of us being grafted into the family of God. That's what happens when Christ enters in. We are adopted and we're grafted into the vine, Jesus himself. And then it says this in verse 5, I am the vine, Jesus is, you are the branches, that's us. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. That's what we want in life, right? That's what we want in relationships. That's what we want in healthy relationships. We want to bear fruit in them. But apart from me, you can do what?
Nothing.
Nothing. Like when we try our best in our own strength, in our own understanding, in our own wisdom to make things better or to make a relationship better, we may be able to get to a certain level. I'm not saying you can't make relationships better without Christ. There's plenty of people out there who are not Christians who have healthy relationships. It's interesting because if you learn what they're doing what Jesus said to do. So they're actually experiencing the fruit of the promises without Christ in the middle of it. Now, so for you, if you start walking and trying to do things in healthy ways, you can do it without Christ. But it's not going to bear all the fruit that God wants in that relationship. We want to be Christ followers who are continually connected to the vine, continually connected to Jesus, abiding in him daily. So he can produce the fruits in our marriages. He can produce the fruit in our parenting and in our kids' lives. And kids, that you can produce the fruit that Christ wants in your life, in the home that you live in, under the roof and under the authority of your parents, right? And like as grandparents, for you, as you now have probably a broader spectrum of family, like how are you helping stay connected so that fruit continues to go out for generations? We all have a part to play. If we abide, we put Christ at the center, we will get to experience Christ's fruit of the Spirit in those relationships. And I think that's what we all really, really want, honestly. We all want health. We all want growth. And yet there's times in relationships, even when it's between two Christians, it doesn't go right. I always say, put two sinners in the same house, you're going to have issues, right? That's just truth. But if you choose to keep walking in this way, you can walk through those, and you can come out the other side as long as you keep walking together and walking with Christ in the middle. Number one thing I want us to understand is that we want Christ-centered relationships, all right? Everybody say that with me? Christ-centered relationships, number one. All right, now we're going to have some fun. We're going to have some doodle time with Pastor Tim. Does that sound fun?
Yeah.
Woo-hoo! You're going to see Tim's artwork. It's going to be awesome. Because I want to draw stuff. Who in here is in one of Tony's classes? All right, Tony is our elder. He's a teaching elder, and he's a teacher. Tony's best friend is what?
Whiteboard.
Whiteboard. All right. Anybody ever been in one of Pastor Jim's classes? Yeah. What does he use?
Whiteboard.
Yeah, I'm not using a whiteboard. I'm using an iPad. All right? So I'm the techie one of the elders here, okay? So we're going to have some fun. I have my little doodle pad up here. Because I want to continue in this idea, okay? So we have Christ at the center. We have this image of all of our four relational spheres, okay? I want to talk about the next point, which I should have put up there first. Fill in the blank on this one, okay? I'll put it up when I'm done. The next blank is family relationship ecosystems, all right? That's the next fill in the blank. Family relationship ecosystems. So write that in there. Family relationship ecosystems. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about ecosystems. This is something that Jim and I came up together as we developed our Equip cohort. And one of the sections of our Equip thing is a 12-month cohort experience where you watch videos during the week, and then you get together every other week with a group of people, and you go deeper into what you learn. And so we developed it, you know, a lot of it on our own. And one of the things that we're talking about is relationships through that. Like, how do you have relational health And we started this picture of ecosystem. So in an ecosystem, you have a sun, right? There's the sun. And you have grass, and so there's some grass. See, isn't it brilliant so far? I mean, this is like Bob Ross right here. I mean, we are killing it. Oh, so this is a little pond, right? A little pond, and let's see. Let's do a tree. I don't have brown, so it's going to be a green tree, okay? So you have a tree, and it's got some green apples growing on it, or it has a disease, one or the other. And then, right? So you have a little ecosystem going on here, and maybe you have a little animal over here. I don't know what to make it. It's got antlers. It's a moose. All right, so we got a moose, okay? So you have a little ecosystem. Now, the thing that's interesting, like physical ecosystems, you know, when you're looking at something like this, a physical ecosystem, like the way our world is designed, it's, for me, like science and God, like people say it's one or the other. I'm like, no, like God made science, so it's God's science. Like that's just the way I see it. So whenever we see how the creation was made and how intricately connected like everything in the world is, you know, like when you talk about nature, there's this ecosystem at play. You know, you have to have the right things in place for a healthy environment, a healthy ecosystem. And right now, you know, there's discussion and argument, like are things changing and what's happening and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not getting into any of that. I'm just saying this is an ecosystem. And so with an ecosystem, you have some very important things. Number one, you have to have the sun, because the sun is it brings the energy, right? It's the thing that helps things grow. And so the sun brings energy to the grass so the grass can grow and to the tree so the tree grows and the fruit grows on the tree. You have to have the sunshine and sunlight, okay, on that. And so then you have grass that's growing. Now, in the grass, you've got all sorts of little things happening in there in the dirt, right? You have worms and little bugs, and they're, like, eating and pooping and, like, making fertilizer. And then you got the animals that come, and they're on the grass, and these animals eat the grass. And then you got water. You need water so that you have this whole other system in the ecosystem that then the water evaporates, puts moisture in the air, and then it brings rain so that there's moisture so that things grow. Right? You have this whole other ecosystem when it comes to water, which is awesome to think about how all of that just works. It just works, right? And then you have the tree, and things live in the trees and climb the trees, and it provides shade when it's too hot and all sorts of things, you know? Now, when this ecosystem is healthy, the environment is good, right? When things are going good. Sometimes, though, there's pollutants that come in, you know, and that's usually a man-made issue. That's usually a problem because usually the man came in and like, well, we're going to throw all of our plastics, you know, into the water. And so now you have polluted water and the fish are like choking on it and the fish aren't there that normally get eaten by certain other animals and things get out of whack, right? It can get really out of whack if the ecosystem is broken. And if things aren't the way they're supposed to be. All right, so this is the way the ecosystems work. The animal needs the water feeds the tree, the sun. It's all interconnected. And they all have a relationship connected to each other, okay? Now, what we're talking about is something a little bit different. I'm going to, if you wanted to take a picture and save it and set on eBay, you have to do that quick. All right, it's gone, sorry. I didn't sign it even, so. Because with that kind of ecosystem, we're talking about a very similar thing. We're talking about personal, relational ecosystems, okay? So let's draw some people, all right? So let's say this is Tim. Hi, everybody, it's Tim. I'm happy. Let's see if I can draw a smile. And two eyes. Hey, it worked. All right, so let's say this is Tim, okay? And by myself, Tim can get along. I'm introvert, so I can get along pretty fine for a long time by myself. But then you get depressed. You know, like, I need a person. I need somebody else. And for me, I've been absolutely, totally blessed because I have a person, and she's wearing a skirt, all right? She has long hair. And so this is my wife, Nikki, and she's kind of straight-faced because I did something wrong. Okay, so so now there's a relationship at play, all right? So there's a relationship at play in this. Now, what ends up happening is that let's draw a circle around Tim. This circle right here is Tim's relational ecosystem, okay? That like all of us have our own relational environment that we create around us. From our family of origin, from, you know, our childhood, as we grow up, things we've experienced and friendships and relationships, stupid things we've done, good things we've done, wins and losses. Like, we are now a person that has this environment, this ecosystem that is around us all the time. And some are good and some are bad. Like, right? Some people can be negative. So maybe they just always have that floating over their ego system. So when everybody sees you, you're like, watch out for so-and-so, right? They just always kind of have a kind of a thing. But some people have a positive. That's supposed to be a plus sign. I have a Band-Aid. It's hard to draw on them. So some people are positive. Like, they're the type of people, whenever you see them, you can't wait to talk to them because you know you're going to feel better after that conversation. So, like, their ecosystem is usually wrapped around, like, a good experience with other people and relationships, right? Now, in relationships, what ends up happening is your ecosystem now intersects with somebody else's ecosystem, right? So everything that they've experienced in their life, everything that they've gone from their family of origin, growing up until where they are today, they're carrying with them as well. We call it in Equip, we call it carrying your backpack. Like, we all have backpacks just loaded full of stuff, you know? And that's our life, that's our history. And so what happens when two ecosystems come together? You get this middle ground, right? You get this space in the middle right here. And this is where your relationships connect. Now, the question is, what happens in this zone right here? What happens when two relationships, now their ecosystems, everything inside of that, now are intertwined? If one person's positive and one person's negative, I'm not saying she is, okay? This is just for example. It depends on who the stronger personality is, right? So if somebody's really powerful personality and they're really negative, this ecosystem in the middle is probably going to be a little life draining for this person, and they're going to continually have to give. Now, if it's the other way around, maybe this person is negative, but the stronger person in the relationship is usually pretty positive and upbeat, and so this person's continually being drawn to, okay, let me grow, let me be a better person, right? That's what happens when our ecosystems collide, when we start to figure out how relationships work. The longer these relationships are like this, I would say the better this gets. Now, here's what we're talking about this morning. I need a bigger eraser. What we're talking about this morning is now what happens when we put, oh, it's not drawn. When we put Christ, let me put Jesus in there, dude. Let me pick a different color. There we go. We'll put a J right there. All right. So what happens? This is the challenge. They're saying, just use a whiteboard, Tim. Just use a whiteboard. We're having more fun with this, Tony. All right. We're having fun. What happens when now Jesus is already in the ecosystem of both people? That we understand that, like, our relational spheres, if Jesus is at the middle, now Jesus becomes a part of that connection, those relationship spheres. So what ends up happening is we start to put Christ right here in the interconnection between us together, right? And now us with God. And now we start to experience a Christ-centered, healthy ecosystem and relationship. Like that is that's what we want you to experience as we go through the series. That's what I want you guys to understand, is that when we do it right, and we don't just think it's just my stuff and her stuff, or it's his stuff and my stuff, it's even in friendships or whatever it might be. Like, when we start looking at ourselves first and seeing what's in our backpack and understand, what are we bringing to other relationships? Is it positive or negative? What are we bringing with our ecosystem into whatever that is? And if it's somebody that you're going to be spending a lot of time with, what are you choosing to bring to that relationship, right? How are you choosing to be intentional about keeping Christ at the center of that relationship? See, our relationships have all sorts of things, right? Like, our relationships, where was I going with that? I was talking about, our relationships, I'm not talking about removing your individual personality, okay? I want you to hear that loud and clear. It's interesting when you see family units and how creative God is. Like, God is so creative. He's creative that he made every single one of us, like everybody in the world, a little different. We're all different. Nikki and I were talking this week. We're talking about voices, like hearing people's voices and people talking. And I don't even know what song we were listening to, a song or something. Somebody had a very distinct voice, and we're like, you can always recognize that voice whenever they start singing, right? You know who it is. And there's no two voices that are even alike, you know? That's how creative God is. And so when you think about families, there's no two families that are going to be identical. We're all going to have our own, like, quirks. We're going to have all our own, like, celebration. We're going to have our own, like, weirdness. Growing up, when I was a kid, you had, like, friends. You go to friends' houses, like, to spend the night. Sometimes you had, like, sleepovers and you hang out. And, like, you got to know how that family operated. And sometimes you had that friend, their house always smelled like fish sticks, right? Like, or you had that friend that's like, I don't know what they do. Like, when they eat, it's weird. Like, they all just kind of do this. And you see the differences between what your family was and, like, your friends' families. And you see all these differences. And some can be bad. I mean, some can be just wrong, and it is wrong. But we'll talk about this. I'm talking about, like, it's okay to still be creative and different in our families. We're not all the same cookie cutter. It's not like Jesus says, do this, click, and now you have to look identical to this family, or you got to look at that family. Because I know as the pastor, you know, I'm preaching. Nikki's going to preach next week on Mother's Day. Our boys are actually going to preach. Isn't that awesome? Like, we're going to actually do a series about parenting. We're going to let the kids preach. I'm like, I don't know what they're going to say either. We're not prompting them, okay? So it's going to be fun. But in that, what I don't want you to think is our family needs to look like Tim and Nikki's family, okay? There are principles that we want you to understand, but there's no cookie cutter. We're all individuals. We all have our fun stuff. We all have our quirks. We all have our different kind of culture and ecosystem in our families, and that is okay. Some of y'all are just loud. Have you ever been in a loud house where it's like everybody's yelling, and it's just, that's normal, right? Like, you go to a family reunion, it's like, bah, 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 it's like everybody's like, yay, family, and like, bah, you know, you like run away. Like, that's what happens when you get married into a large family, and you're from, like, it's just me and my brother, you know, and that's our family, and like, I got married into a family. It's like, I went to the first family reunion the summer we got married. I don't know how many, there's 100 and something people there. I'm like, this is your family? Holy cow. This is nuts, right? You marry into that kind of stuff. Or whether your family's quiet, or maybe some families are very organized and everything in your house has its very specific place, and, you know, the post-it notes are like very orderly. I'd say you have somebody OCD in your family, and those, they usually rule, okay? The OCD folks are like, you know, that kind of thing. Or or maybe your family's chaotic. Maybe your family's just really fun. And everything you do is just a little goofy, and you have a blast doing that. Or some families are very serious, and they just always are. Some are strict. You got homes where it's just like, nah, nah, nah. You have some other homes where it's just like loose and goosey, and it's like everybody's doing whatever. You know, it's okay. It's okay. As long as we're learning to put Christ at the center of the home, put Christ at the center of your relationships, that our ecosystems, personal, are connecting with other people's ecosystems relationally, and we're bringing something to the table. We're not just sucking life out of everybody we're around, right? That we are being Christ in those relationships. Now, I want to wrap up this message with a passage that I read a lot, and I even preach it a lot, okay? And it's in Mark chapter 12, okay? Mark chapter 12 is one of the things that's, and this is called the Great Commandment, right? When Jesus was teaching, one of the teachers of the law came to Jesus and heard them debating, noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer. He asked them, this guy asked Jesus, of all the commandments, which is the most important? Now, hear the background. Hear the background on this. So you guys, a lot of you at New Hope, you know the answer, right? Because this is something I preach on a lot. And some people would be like, man, Tim, why is he always preaching on that same verse? Why is he always like say that same verse all the time? Let me answer it this way. If Jesus, who is all God, was teaching us, and he said, you know the whole Old Testament? You know all the laws? You know, like, how, like, the Jews had to memorize all those laws, and they had to keep them all, and all that kind of stuff? All of those can be summed up in this sentence. How often should I preach that sentence? I do it at least once a month. And I think that's okay. Because if Jesus said, this is the most important thing, we should talk about the most important thing, shouldn't we? So if you get bored of the most important thing, you're getting bored with the wrong thing. Okay? Because when Jesus said it, We understand if we get these two things right, it affects everything else. Everything else we do, everything else in the New Testament, everything in the Old Testament, if we get these two things right, he says. This sums it up. He said this, "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." So he makes a proclamation to start. The Lord's not divided. The Lord's not in argument with the Lord. Like, the Lord is one. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength." Number one is love God with all you got, right? It's Jesus at the center. Put him at the center. And then he says, that's not the end of the sentence. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. He's neighbor, he's not like physical neighbor. He said, love the people you are around. You know those relational ecosystems that keep bumping up? That's your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. Sums it all up. Sums it all up. And the thing is, the more I see people, the more I hear stories, the more I have seen and tried to counsel people in relationships, and the more I just see more and more, if they would just do this, all these other things over here would start to get right. If they would just do this, all the other things would line up in the relationship, right? And so we teach, again, I'm going to teach you one last thing as we wrap up, and then all of this will kind of filter through the whole series. With this great commandment, I always say this is the question you need to ask yourself in every relationship or situation, right? That question is, what does love demand of me in this, right? That's the key question for all of life. Well, if you're in a troubled situation, what does love demand of me in this? It's not, how can I fix them to make my problem go away, right? That's what we think the answer or the question should be of everything. How do I fix that so that doesn't happen anymore? How do I fix this? No, how am I supposed to love? What does love demand of me in this, whatever that is, relationship, situation, circumstance? What does love demand of me? When you answer that question, you start getting it right. There's three things that we see to have healthy relationships in these ecosystems that we have, these connections that we have. And these three things must be in place for you to have a healthy relationship. Love, trust, and free will. Love, trust, and free will. All right, I'm going to give you a 30,000-foot view on these three, okay? Love, trust, and free will. Love is what we just explained. Love the Lord your God, all you got, and love other people. That is the greatest commandment. See, what love does in relationships, it doesn't put us at the center of the relationship, does it? That's not love. Love isn't, what can I get out of you? That's not love. Love says, what can I give to you in this relationship? How can I bless you? See, love allows us to draw close and to serve each other. That's what love does. That's the starting point of relationships. And some of you are like, so you mean I have to love my coworker? You don't have to love them. Like, I'm not saying that. But when we're talking about this kind, like, yes. You choose, what are you going to bring to bless that person? Even if they're cursing you. That's when, like, real Christianity starts happening. Jesus said, bless those who curse you, right? Pray for your enemies. Like, that's when it's like, whoa, okay. That's love. That's saying, you must have some messed up stuff in your life that you're hurting me this bad, that you're attacking like this or you're doing that. I'm going to be praying for you and I'm going to show you love, right? That's hard. But in normal relationships, not like abusive ones, just even in normal relationships, when I choose to serve someone, if I choose to ask the question, how can I bless this person? That is the beginning of a healthy relationship, right? It's not about getting, it's about giving and serving one another. This is mutualness in it that happens. Now, love, underneath love is this word trust, because trust, if love is the thing that allows us to draw close and serve each other, trust then provides the safety and security to grow closer. That's what trust does. Trust means consistency in relationship. Meaning, like, when you see somebody, you know what to expect every time you see them, right? You learn how to trust somebody who is showing themselves the same way over and over and over again, right? It's consistency. It's clear expectations. Trust is built on expectations, right? If somebody doesn't meet your expectation, you no longer trust them. because they didn't meet my expectation. The tricky thing is, how many of us have expectations of people, but we don't even know what they are, but when it goes wrong, we know that we're upset about it, you know? That's usually when our expectations bubble up. Well, they didn't, did you talk to them about that? Well, no. Well, then that's not their fault. Like, they didn't know you expected that, or they didn't know that was an issue in your relationship, right? Like, trust is this, it's this undergirding. It's like the rebar inside of love. So love is the thing. Trust is the rebar by which it's built upon. You can't really build a healthy relationship without learning to trust one another. And the last one is free will. Free will maintains our personal choices and identity, right? If I love you, but I want you to change everything about you, is that love? Will that other person trust me? No, they're going to feel controlled. See, this is the same way Jesus relates with us. And this boggles my mind, okay? Let me talk more about free will, and then I'll go to the mind-boggling thing. All right. Free will maintains our personal choices and identity. No one wants to be controlled and manipulated. Nobody wants that, right? Somebody who allows free will actually in turn celebrates each other's uniqueness. They celebrate the differences. They celebrate what they see that is positive in the other person. And they want to see that continue to grow. You're giving them free will. If I force you to love me, it's no longer love. If I do things to control you, it's not free will. And now trust is completely eroded. You no longer have a relationship. Right? These three things, it's like the triangle of a healthy relational ecosystem. Learning to trust, choosing to love, right? And allowing individuality, allowing free will for one another. That means free will to make mistakes and just love them through that. Free will to choose to love you back. This is how God relates with us, everybody. This is what he does for us. God chose to love us. Back to that first passage. I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. He loved me first. Even when my ecosystem was a mess, right? Even when I didn't look that pretty, he chose to love me first, to die for me. And for us, he gives us free will to choose it, right? God doesn't control any of us. He's not like, we're not his little puppets, like he lets us choose to love him back, because that's what love is. If he made us love him, it's no longer love. We choose to draw closer and to serve God because of what he has done to love us. He has proved himself to us that we can trust him. And as we learn that, what that looks like, here's the crazy thing that most people don't think about. The question isn't like, can you trust God? The question is, can God trust you? He's given you everything and he's trusting you with his love. He's trusting you with the grace he's given you. He's trusting you with the relationships in your life. So the question is, can you trust God? God's already trustworthy. He's already proven it. The question is, can God trust me in the relationship? Can he trust that I'm going to spend time with him? Can he trust that I'm going to pray and I'm going to talk to him? I'm going to get into his word. It's a two-way street in that. And he gives us free will the whole time. So those three things are the same thing in relationship with God. A healthy relationship with God requires love, trust, and free will. Your relationship with other people, same thing. Same thing. So, I'm going to wrap up. In your relationships, as you're thinking about who's in your car, oops, I don't drive that bad that my wife falls out of the seat. All right. When you think about who is in your car with you, your family, the question today is, who are you in that relationship? What is your ecosystem? Is it mostly positive, mostly negative? And what are you bringing to grow love, trust, and free will in each of those closest relationships? Okay? All right. God, thank you for this morning. Thank you for the beginning of this series as we're going to dig into this stuff deeper. But we just thank you that you speak through your word. You speak through through your Holy Spirit. You love, trust us with the gospel. I mean, you've given it to us, and you give us free will. And I'm so thankful, God, that you choose to love us that way. God, this morning, for each of us, as we think about our relationships, I pray that you would help us this week, and maybe even today, or even right now, to take a real personal assessment. Where are we in our relationships? What are we bringing to them, God? Just reveal that to us. Sometimes we can't see it on our own, and we definitely need your Spirit to show us who we are. And God, if there's things that need to change, just that you would start to lovingly, the way you do it, just lovingly open us up, show us, and shepherd us by your Spirit. God, I want to pray right now just specifically for people who are really struggling in relationships. And maybe they're in a marriage that isn't, maybe they're just cohabitating. They're not even really in love. They're not experiencing what you dream for them. I pray that you protect their hearts, that you would not let them go down the road of bitterness or malice or anger or anything that would continue to destroy. We know that's the enemy's playground. I pray that you would just give them a peace with one another and with you, that they may learn and be shown and grow together. I pray for the parents in this room that have kids that are unruly, or they're absent, or they've ran away, or they're just really struggling with. I mean, that's probably one of the most heartbreaking things, is to have a kid that just is really struggling. And so I pray for those parents in this room. I pray for peace and blessing on them, for patience and understanding, and that you would open up some things for them in the journey. I pray for the grandparents in the room that don't have day-to-day-to-day influence, but they have relational influence in their family's life. Give them wisdom on how to use that well, how to love their overall family well. And God, I pray for the kids in the room right now who are here. Oh God, protect them from things they do not need to experience. Protect them from things the enemy would love to just destroy parts of their life with. Just protect them. Help them learn and grow and understand what it means to walk in love and trust and free will. And God, we just thank you for this morning. We thank you for your word. And we just ask all of this. I just pray this in Jesus' name alone. Everybody said amen. Amen. Awesome. Thank you, guys. I know Nikki has some things for us to...